Tonight's shiur, Parshas Devarim, opening up the new sefer. Midrash says, beginning of the sedra, Eilah Devarim, Amar Shmuel Bar Nachman, Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu, Kedvorim. The darshan word Devarim, lashon Devorim, bees. Kedvorim, hayu banai, mitnagim ba'olam, hayidei tzadikim, hayidei nevim. That my sons acted like bees. Through their tzaddikim and through the nevims, the Yetz Yosef explains that just like the bees, the little ones, they follow after the mother bee, the main bee, so too we follow after our gdolim, our tzaddikim, our nevim. It's a maisa here. It's about the Chazon Ish. He once went to a bris. He was invited to be the sandek, and he did so. And after the bris, Mela, all the people at the bris, the Chazon Ish, so they all went up to him and all, poured out their hearts to him, their problems, about this, about that. And he listened very patiently to this one and to that one. He heard everybody out. So after he spoke to everybody individually, he it came time for him to leave. So he made his way out to the car. He got into the car and he told his driver to drive, but he said, drive very slowly. Very slowly when you're leaving the building here. And so the driver could understand. He thought maybe he drove too fast on the way here and the Chazon Ish was upset at him, where he was driving. Okay, fine. So he drives very slowly. And then he makes a turn, whatever. And then the Chazon Ish says, okay, now you can drive normal. So he's like, well, what's going on? So the Chazon Ish just explained. He says, as you notice, after the bris, everybody's coming up to me and telling about their tzaras, about this, about that, and I heard them out. So I felt if I would get into the car and you drive off, burn rubber, pull out really fast, everybody would think that he just wants to get away from us. He had enough of our problems. He doesn't care. He just wants to get out of here. So therefore, that's why I told you to drive very slowly, so they shouldn't get this feeling like I'm just want to get away from them. And then after, now they were out of eye shot and they couldn't see me anymore. Okay, now we can drive normal. A maisa with Rav Tzadka. It's on the pasuk Pnu Sulachem. He was the Rosh Yeshiva of Poros Yosef, and similarly, when he was giving a shir in Cholon at Bar Beirav over there. So after the shir, the organizer of the shir came up to him and said, "Would you like we'll order a taxi for you, pay for a taxi you to go back to Yerushalayim, the yeshiva." He says, no, I don't want a taxi. He says, I don't take taxis. He says, you sure with that? He says, no, please. So he said, okay, so they found somebody who was driving, and whatever, and they took him. So on the way, they asked him, why is he so against taking taxis? He says, I'll tell you. He says, being the Rosh Yeshiva, I go around, try to get donations from people, from Chutz La'aretz and Eretz Yisrael, whatever, to keep up the yeshiva. So I'm afraid, he said, that if people will see me in a taxi, you're going to think, Al Cheshbon Yeshiva. See, he's taking taxis on using the yeshiva money. He knows, I don't want people to think that. So therefore, I made a point, I never take taxis. So you never know who will pass by and see, Yeshiva's in a taxi, and they're going to think that comes out of yeshiva's money, which they want to, give their money to, or their hard-earned money to yeshiva when I'm using it for taxis. Therefore, I make a point, I'm not taking taxis. So Agav, totally Agav, he said that he's Noheg, or Yehuda Tzadka. Whenever he was called to be a sandek at a bris, he would give a little present to the baby. A little safer or something. I don't know if the baby could read it, but a little safer. So they asked him, what kind of a minag is that? So he said that he learned it from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's why. Because at Avram Avinu's bris, who was the sandek of Avram Avinu's bris? It was Hashem. And what did Hashem, after the bris, what did he do? He gave Avram Eretz Yisrael, gave him a gift. We see from here, a son, they should give a gift. So I try to follow Kodesh Baruch Hu and give a gift. Okay, it's interesting, Shaila that came up, also in the Pasuk, Pnu Usulachim, as you'll see why. There was a fellow, and he had his business on a second building into the street, but it was a one-way street going out to the main street. So it was a real big pain for him, because every time he wanted to go to his shop, you know, we couldn't just, you know, turn in from the main street because it was a one-way street going out. So you had to go all the way around, you know, like three traffic lights. It'd like take them extra 20 minutes just because you have to make the whole turnaround to get in through the other way, through the one-way street. Anyway, so every now and then, you know, he's like, you know, impatient, and he would, you know, make a quick, you know, turn through 6 second building right on the corner, and as he quickly turn into the, against the one-way street. But anyway, he did that once, and the cop stopped him, pulled him over, gave him a big fat ticket and points, whatever, you know, going driving against the one-way street. Anyways, he didn't know what to do because he didn't want to, you know, get a ticket again. We thought, Shani, it was crazy to some waste of time for him to drive all around. So he had an idea. He noticed that on the building on the corner, every morning when he would come to work, on the merpeset, there would be a pensionnaire, like a pensioner, his old man. He'd sit there, eat his breakfast, whatever, on his porch there outside, and right on the corner there. So he had an idea. He goes up to the guy, and he says, I want to make a deal with you. He says, you know, I really want to turn in here, but I'm afraid the cops, you know, but you have a nice view over here of the whole corner. So I'll tell you what, you give me a hand signal. You'll tell me if there's a cop here and or not, and I'll know if you can turn in, you know. So, I said, I'll tell you what, I'll pay you for it. You know, it's worth it for me. Would you do it? So then, yeah, why not? You know, sure, no problem. So fine, that's what he did, and the whole month, you know, he gave him a signal, yes, no, is the cop here, not, nah. And it was going really well. So at the end of the month, he goes up to the old man, he says, here, and he gives him 250 shekels. He goes, Shkoyach, thank you for so much, you know, you always helped me a lot. And he goes, okay, no problem. So they continued their deal, and until one morning, you know, he sees, okay, everything, coast is clear. He makes his turn in to get to the street. Cop was right there and stops him, pulls him over. But that was now big time, because if you do the same, you know, Vera twice in the same spot, you know, that's really bad news. So I get a huge ticket and points it out, whatever. So he was furious. He goes upstairs to the old man. He goes, "What's going on over here? What you're supposed to? You're supposed to do your job, you know? The cop stopped me." What? He says, "You know, you're right. It was my fault. You know, I wasn't paying attention. I was. It really was my fault." So he goes, "Okay, very good. So it's your fault. So pay me. You know, you have to pay me for the ticket. It's your fault. I got this ticket, so you should pay me for it." So he goes, "Listen, I'm not going to pay you for your ticket." He goes, "Why not?" He says, "Grandma, Grandma ben Ezekiel Fatter, indirectly caused you to. Yeah, okay, but I don't have to pay you for that. It's in there." Anyways. So they took it to a Shaila Din Torah or whatever, to Rav Zilberstein. So at first glance, one might say, well, the Shaila is not even a Shaila. Why? Because he hired him to do something wrong. It's not okay to go against a one-way street. It's against the law, and it's dangerous or whatever. That's why the law says you can't drive against the traffic on a one-way street. So these are poshim. So why? What's you have to? Who should pay him? Should pay him? Forget to throw these guys out of the Beis Din. I mean, they're a bunch of poshim, bunch of negligent people. So it brings an interesting nesiva. Says it's not the case. It said if somebody hires you, even if it's something usser, but a deal's a deal. Either the Sivas brings a case of somebody hired to Reuben hires Shimon to give Eidu Sheker, to give false testimony. He'll pay you $100 to give false testimony, and then he didn't want to pay him, so he's going to take him to the door, and he has to pay. Because he's telling him to do usser, he's paying him to do something totally usser. It doesn't matter, the deal's a deal, and he hired him for it. I don't get to, it's usser, you're not allowed to, but Lamaisi hired him, he didn't keep his part of the deal, so he has to pay. So therefore, it's not such a wild thing here either, that, okay, he hired him to do something which is not so right, but okay, but a deal's a deal. So he comes out in the end, he says that Lamaisi, he should have to pay for the ticket, the old man, because he was wrong. I grandma. So he says, no, because grandma doesn't apply. He gives an example. He says, let's say somebody hires a hovalah, a guy brings moving van. He says, he hires the guy, he says, "Listen, I made a huge order of esrogim. I'm an esrog dealer, and I want you to bring these esrogim from this place." Fine, so they make a deal. And the guy arrives in Cheshvan, right, after Sukkot, with the esrogim. And he goes, what'd you do? So he says, I got a little delayed on the way or whatever, but here I came, I came in the end. He goes, what do you came in the end? After Sukkot, what are you doing with all these esrogim? He says, grandma, okay, I caused you a lot, but grandma, I indirectly caused you a lot. He says, I'm not called grandma. He says, the guy, if you're hired to come at a certain time in a certain place, and that's what you got to do, and you can't say if you don't do it, grandma, Right? They said the same thing over here. You know, he's hired to give the guy signals at the right time, the right place, and he didn't do so. You got the same grammar. Everybody's not an excuse, and as Pashtus, he says that he has to pay. Okay, he says, the Pasuk B'Yavarech Eschem Asher Dibeir Lachem brings a Maisa with a Bacher. He was about 14 or 15 years old, and he came with the following Shaila. He says, a good friend of his needed a kidney transplant, and he happened to be the same, you know, type what or whatever the matim for to donate his kidney, and he wanted to donate his kidney to his friend. The problem is that the authorities won't allow such a thing because he's too young, right? So you have to be at least 20 years old to be in order to donate a kidney, because they're afraid that he's just a little kid. When he grows up, he might be like, "What did I do? You know, I gave away one of my kidneys." You know, he's too young to make a decision like that. So that's the authorities. So he asked shyly. He said he wanted to know what the Torah would have to say about it, you know, and if the Torah said it was okay, he thinks he could handle or be able to donate anyways. He knows he has got certain protection, whatever, certain you know, people to speak to, and he can probably end up doing it if he gets the okay. But he wanted to know if what the Torah would say about it. So it's interesting, because normally, you know, whenever, generally speaking, we talk of who's an adult, you know, can make decisions in Yiddish, you know, he's 13, you know, once he's bar mitzvah, and that's it, he's an adult, and say, but there's an interesting Rambam that we see that it's not always the case. The Rambam is in Hilchus Mechira, talks about somebody who is Yorish, who inherits some kark or whatever, and he wants to sell it, and he sells it, and Rambam says, Ein min kura mechar ad sheyeh ben 20 shana. He says if he sells, it's not a good sale until he's 20 years old. Interesting. You know, like, here he's not even bar mitzvah. He has to be 20. And why? He says, Afal pi, even he's an adult, doesn't matter, but your day he knows tiva masa, shema yim kar bazol, b'nei shedato note achar amod, because he might sell it too cheaply, because his mind just on money, v'dayin lo nityash v'dayto b'darchi ha'olam. He doesn't have yishu v'das yet, not until he's 20. So that was the shaila. So maybe the same thing to say over here with the kid. He's just not old enough to make a decision, which is basically what the government said. So they brought the shaila to Rav Yashiv, that's all. And he said no. He said left it from this Rambam. We said that the kid could give it, because we see that the kid has a very good das. You know that most kids are not going to be willing to, you know, get them to go through an operation and give a thing to the, and he sees the importance of it, or the chashivas wants to help his friend, whatever. We see that, but he's a big bardas. So he says Mustama, he wouldn't be allowed. But interesting, there's another case where there was a family, and there's two boys, an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old, and the eight-year-old needed a kidney. And the older brother, a 10-year-old, was they found it would have been a good, you know, person to donate it. They found it was Matim, and they asked to hear the officials would allow it, because since it's the same family and that's the father is the apotropos on the children, so they would allow it if the father would give the okay. So he asked the Shaila, and here Rav Yashiv said no, nothing doing, because he's only 10 years old. And here we would say that the kid's not old enough and to make to give of his kidney, and therefore, and when he grows older, he might not be so happy with the decision. Here he is too young. Here, Rav Yashiv passing that way. So he told the father, and the father was he wanted to help his 8-year-old. You know, a kidney is a kidney, you know. So he felt a little bit bad or whatever. So Rav Zilberstein wanted to give him a little bit of chizuk, and he says he brought an interesting gra. The gra says that if a person has anything stolen in his house, he says even a masmer, a nail. You have a stolen nail in your house, the Gra says you won't see a simen bracha in your learning. As you should say, so far away from Gezel. So he says, if the halacha is that you're not supposed to, you know, your 10-year-old is not supposed to give his kidney to the 8-year-old, and he does, it's like stealing. So if you have a nail in your house that's not yours, it's not, you won't see a simen bracha. Can you imagine if you have a kidney? It's not yours. You know, he's taking his brother's kidney. He's not supposed to take. So if you take it, he have a stolen kidney. You can imagine it. He'll never see a Sivu Bracha. So in the end, they went and they found a kidney and donator, and everything worked out. Okay. Okay, I'll get a point for this. It's a rather lengthy but interesting story. He brings it on the Pasuk, Ki Amishpat Le'elokim Hu. says there was a fellow in America, and he has a dream. And in his dream, his relatives, his parents who were not alive anymore, and some grandfather, grandmother, they came to him in a dream. And they said to him, we want to call you up here to the base in Shalmala, because we want to clarify certain facts about something that happened to you, whatever, somebody did something to you, like 43 years ago. And 2 years ago, we wanted to call you up, but you were only 58 years old at the time. Now that you're 60, they decide they want you to call you up here. So he said to them, it's very nice, but I don't want to go. I like it here, you know. So they said, no, but it's time. It's important. You have to give testimony here about a certain thing, whatever. And he says, well, I don't know. So what should I do? So he said, so they told him, ask a rabbi. So he asked them in the dream, which rabbi? So they said, ask Rav Chaim Kanievsky. He wakes up. It's like 4 o'clock in the morning, and he's all shooken up. And he calls his friend. He's in America, right? So he calls his friend in Eretz Yisrael and tells him the story of the dream, and asked him if he can go to Rav Chaim and ask him what to do. Now, he told him, he said, listen, I'll tell you why, I'm very concerned about this dream, because it's real. Something really did happen 43 years ago, and I really was almost called up to the Beis Shemala 2 years ago. It's really true. So it's not like this crazy dream makes no sense. It makes a lot of sense. So he explained, he told his friend the story, like, well, what happened? He said, 43 years ago, so this was now, he's 60, this was when he was like 17 or whatever. So he said, I was in yeshiva, and I learned in yeshiva, he said, like 300, about 300, big men, about 300 guys. And one morning, I go to my shtender, my gemara, and I to start to learn. So all of a sudden, Bacher comes up to me and says, excuse me, you have my gemara. That's my gemara you're using. So I told him, it's not your gemara, it's my gemara. I know my gemara. So he says, no, he says, this is, he said, I'm sorry, it's not your Gemara, it's my Gemara. So the Bacher turns around and leaves, fine. So what happens, it ended up, he went to some Rebbe who was sitting on the other side of the Beis Medrash, and he gets called that the Rebbe wants to see him. So he says, okay, so he goes to the other side of Beis Medrash, and he says, yes, the Rebbe says, give him back his Gemara. Without asking him anything, clarified, he says, give him back his Gemara. So he said, but it's my Gemara. So why should I give him, it's my Gemara. So he says, then what happened? The Rebbe takes his hand back, gives me a smack across the face, like you've never, it was so loud. First of all, I flew from it. Secondly, it was so loud, the whole Beis Medrash, 300 bar, everybody was quiet. Everybody like, look, it was like, it shocked the whole Beis Medrash. And I flew in the air and I landed there, and I literally didn't know what hit me, And I got up. Can you imagine, besides the pain, but the embarrassment, and everybody staring at me. Obviously, they thought I did some terrible thing, which I didn't do anything wrong with my Gemara, And I was totally mevuyash, and it was like, so I left the Beis Medrash, of course, and I walked out and this, and I take a few days off the yeshiva, but I decided I wasn't gonna make a big deal about it. I was gonna forget, the incident, not bring it up, and just let it go. He says, of course, I never forgot the incident. How can you forget such a thing? It was such a trauma. He said, it was terrible. But okay, so life goes on, and So he says, 4 years ago, I decided I wanted to visit the yeshiva and see some of the old boys, Rebbeim or whatever. And I made a stop at this Rebbe's house. I wanted to see him. I hadn't seen him in all this time, And I went over to his house, and his wife answers the door. I said, the guy speaks to see the Rebbe. I haven't seen him in a long time, many years. I want to visit. She says, well, I don't know. He's not so well. He says, not well? I said, no, but please, I really would like to see him whenever. So his wife says, okay, fine. So she brings him in, and he's shocked. He says, what does he see? He sees his former Rebbe, not his former, well, no, former person that gave him the smack, that is, he's lying there in his bed, like sitting up in his bed, and he's making these weird motions with his head. is that it looked like somebody was smacking him. He was like, going back and forth and back and forth. His head kept going bobbing back, like as if somebody's smacking him on this side, smacking him on that side, smacking him. His head was going back and forth. And that was just like, and the wife told him that, he said, you know, the doctors don't know what it is. It's not like Parkinson's or anything. They can't figure out what it is. You don't know what it's from, you know. It just, because for the longest time, he just do those weird gestures with his head, and they can't control himself. So he said, I knew exactly, of course, what that was from, but I didn't want to say anything. So I just said, you know, okay, and whatever, and before Shlema, you know, and I left the house. Fine. So that was like 4 years ago. So he said, then he said, 2 years ago, okay. I had a heart attack. I had a very serious heart attack, and I got to the hospital. The doctor said, if you would come a half hour later, that would have been the end of you. So that was the 2 years. That was what they told me in the dream, that I was supposed to be called up 2 years. And what was it? It was about this incident that happened with this Rebbe 43 years ago, right? And they called me to, you know, I don't know, get some information about him and thing. Anyways, so that's the story. And so I see it's real. It's not stum, this dream. And I don't know what to do. And they said I should speak to Rav Chaim, but I'm here in America. Maybe you can go for me. So his friend said, fine. So he goes to Rav Chaim. And at first he couldn't see him. It wasn't time for seeing people, whatever. But he said, look, my friend was told from Shemayim that he has to go to Rav Chaim. Okay, that's different. Come in, you know. So he tells him the story. So Rav Chaim wasn't impressed. And he just said, "Chalamo shav yedaberun. It's just a dream. Don't worry about it." And but then his friend said, "Listen, but my friend's really, you know, taking it to heart. He feels it's real. He doesn't know what to do." So he says, "Okay, if it bothers him, let him get a basin together and be moichel the Rebbe. Should be moichel." So fine. So he contacts his friend back in America, and he says, "This is what Rav Chaim said. That if you want, it really bothers you, just make a basin and you know, be moichel him." So he did that, but even after that, he didn't feel right. He said it wasn't enough. So he decided that he was going to go back to the Rebbe and get be moichel mamish, you know, panim el panim. Go to him, be moichel him, and you know, because otherwise he didn't feel shalom with this whole thing. So he went back to the Rebbe's house and he's knocking on the door, ring the doorbell, no answer. So a neighbor comes by and says, "Oh, nobody's home. He's in the hospital. He's in critical condition. And he's in the hospital." He goes, "Oh my gosh." So he quickly drives to the hospital. He comes in. Sure enough, he's in intensive care. And he's like, you know, last minutes of his life or whatever. The family was all there already because it was, you know, towards the end. So he comes to one of the children and he says, "Listen, I have to speak to your father, you know." She said, "Yeah, he's not well. He's all hooked up and everything." He says, "Is he conscious?" He says, "Yeah, he's conscious mentally, but he's, you know, very bad, you know, condition." And it's his last minutes, whatever. So he says, no, but I really got to speak to him because, you know, he has to be moichel me about something he did to me." So he said, "That now's the time. I mean, he's you're going to get him upset, you know. Give him a break. He's at his last, you know, moments." So he goes, no, lehefech. He says, "This is important. Anyways, he was able to convince him. So he goes up to the Rebbe, who's, you know, again, all hooked up with all these machines and everything. But he was able to, he was coherent. So he comes up to him, he says, "I don't know if you remember me, you know, it was this bacher that you hit." And, so he shook his head, "Yeah." So he says, I want you to be moichel me, that you should ask me mechila, you know, so I can be moichel you for what you did." So he did. He said, "We be moichel me, whatever." And he said, "Yes, I'll be moichel. Fine, I'll be moichel you, and then I'll also ask you mechila, because on my side, did, you know, you told me to give the Gemara to that guy, and I didn't. So maybe I should have, you know. So I want to ask you mechila. Let's play it safe." Yeah. So he said, "Fine, good." So everybody's moichel everybody else, and he left the hospital, and he felt better. You know, he did what he had to do, and that was that. What happens? He comes home. No sooner does he arrive home, he gets a phone call. Who is this? The family of the Rebbe. He says, "You're not going to believe this." He says, "Just after you left, all of a sudden, the father started feeling better." He says, "Vital signs are proof, this, whatever." Huh? And he's starting to mamish feel better. And they start taking him off the machines, whatever. And sure enough, 2 days later, 48 hours later, he was home walking around, and everything was fine. And he's 87 years old. by this time. He's 87 years old. He's walking around, fine, everything's gone like nothing. And his head movements were gone also. So they couldn't figure out, well, how did that disappear so quickly? But everything, his head, everything's fine. It was totally good. So after that, he made another meeting with the Rebbe, you know, again, to now that everybody's healthy, you know, to again, be morchal each other, fine. And there's only one last piece of the puzzle that they were interested, you know, find out about. And who's that? Whatever happened to that Bachar that started this whole thing? They said it was his Gemara, you know, whatever happened to him? So they said, you know, let's try to find him, see what's doing with him. So sure enough, they located him, and he went to see him. And what happened? They saw that he was not well, and he lost his mind. He must have been crazy, and they couldn't even talk to the guy. So. Yesh din v'yesh dayan. That's, of course, the lesson of the story. Okay. Are we holding here? Okay. On the pasuk Behem Yeshua, he brings a shail of Yerusha. He says there was a father, his name was, let's call him Yaakov, and he had a grandson whose name was Elitzur. And out of all his children, grandchildren, he was the only one that was really serious in his learning, Torah learning, whatever. So he calls him over one day, his grandson. He says, listen, you know, I'm really proud of you, how you're learning and studying and everything. So I want to give you a gift. So what does he give him? He gives him $500,000. Nice gift. So he gives him $500,000. He says, you know, I'm proud of you. I want to, you know, so you should be able to continue learning. Okay. So that was it. They didn't make a big deal. It wasn't publicized, whatever. It was just between the two of them. Then, eventually, Yaakov, the grandfather, died. And his son, Shimon, he was put in charge of dividing out the Yerusha. So, within the Tzava, he said he wanted to give each one of his grandchildren $100,000. So, Shimon had found out that Elitzur got $500,000 some time ago. And he didn't want to give him $100,000. You know, why should he get $100,000? He already got $500,000, which is none of his business. But so he decided to make a rule that anybody that got any money in the lifetime of the grandfather is not deserving of any of the Yerusha, which he was not allowed to do. But that's what he did. So they all had to go to the Beit Mishpat, to the courts, and they all had to testify that he didn't have any money, get any money in the lifetime, and then they would get $100,000. So the Shiloh was, Elitzur wanted to know, is he allowed to lie and say that he didn't get any money so that he can get the 100,000? Meaning, because really, Midin, he's deserving of it. The grandfather didn't say, except for Elitzur got money, he didn't say that. He said, each grandchild, he's a grandchild, there's another 100,000. But this Shimon, his uncle, didn't want him to have it. So, in other words, Shiloh was, can he lie to bring out the truth? You know, so he deserves the money. But if he's going to tell the courts, yeah, I got, they're not going to give him anything. So he wants to lie to get to the truth, so to speak. The question is, would that be okay? So he brings, in the end, the final thing was he said he could. He could lie in order to get the truth. But before that, he brings an interesting Rashba, Shas and Shubas Rashba, that the Rashba was asked, if somebody's, we have a din of Avi Dinish Dinil Nafsha, right? A person is allowed to take the law into his own hands to get something back that is his. Right, you can even hit, knock a pizra, right? Take a stick and hit people in order to get what's coming to you. So somebody asked the Rashba, can you lie? Right, if you can hit somebody to get back, can you lie in order to get something back that is rightfully yours? So the Rashba says, you should not. He said, why? Because lying is different. It's sanui, I'm quoting the Lashon of the Rashba. He says, v'sanui ha-sheker v'ahu v'emes v'ein t'muraso klipaz. There's nothing greater than emes, and sheker is hate. It's a terrible, terrible thing. So therefore, that's something, even when it means getting back your own thing, you shouldn't lie for it. Okay, but he wants to make a chiluk here in this specific case that he said he allowed it. But the nice of the Rashba of the importance of emes. The pasuk Grach Ebra Baraglai brings interesting shaila. Says in England, the ganavim. Listen up. The Ganavim found an interesting way of detecting if people are home or not, which, you know, if not home, they can rob their house. What do they do? So in the winter, it snows there, so it leaves a nice, you know, nice white blanket of snow in front of the houses. So the Ganavim picked up, they said, they looked, that when there was no footprints in the snow, they knew that the people weren't home. Because they were at home, there'd be footprints, people going out of the house, in the house, you know, you'd see the thing. But if there's just a blanket, it means that it's a sign that nobody's home. And that's how they do the robberies. They'd see it looked like, you know, a nice thick thing of snow. People haven't been walking there for a while. So then they knew that nobody was home. They go in to rob the houses. Okay. So it was the Shiloh. So one Friday night, this Yid's walking home from shul. And he notices that one of the neighbors were not home, and there was it was all snow, no footprints or whatever. So what he wanted to do was he wanted to go to the house and walk back and forth and back and forth to make it look their footprints, so that guy shouldn't get robbed, save him from being robbed. So he had a shaila. Was that okay to do on Shabbos? This was Shabbos, right? Making footprints in the snow on Shabbos. Okay, so what's the shaila? So normally, even though when a person walks on snow or certain like mud or whatever it might be, you make an imprint in the thing. Sometimes you even have on your back or your bottom of your shoe, you have a pattern. I mean, even the name of the company or whatever. When you walk, you're like printing as you're walking. But that's okay. Why? So they say because you don't have you're not doing it for any toalas, you know, you want it, you don't care about it. It's time you're walking, and it happens to be, and it's no shaykhus to ksiva, the real the malach of ksiva, because it's totally your mind's not on a bakhlal, it's nothing. Okay, so that would be fine if, when you're stum walking. But here, he's not stum walking. He's walking to make imprints on the snow, so that, to say from ganavim. So it's bechavana. It's not just happen to be walking, doesn't care. He wants it. Right, and even though if something which ksiva, which is not miskayim, is not aser, but that's only midaraisa, midarabanan, even something that's going to disappear is still aser midarabanan. You can't write in things like writing on a window that has steamy window or whatever. You cannot allow to, even though it's going to dry out and you won't see it anymore. But it's midarabanan, still aser. So that doesn't help you here that the snow is going to disappear, melt, whatever case might be, because it's still aser, would be aser midarabanan. So that was a shy. So they came out with, in the end, that probably could do it. He says, why? He says, because it's really a trade Rabbanan. But how? The one Rabbanan that it's going to, it's Ksivat is not Miskayim. Now, if he walks normally, he says, fine, that's the problem. So what he could do is he can switch his shoes and put his right shoe on his left foot and left shoe on his right foot and walk like that, which is with the shinui, because it's not really comfortable to walk like that. And since he's walking with the shinui, so then you have a trade rabbanan. You have one rabbanan of ksiva shlomi skaim, and the other rabbanan I'm doing with the shinui, and in bakum hefsed, you're saving the guy from being robbed. So he says, choliot, you can find a head. Okay, end up one last little maisa. Brings down the pasuk Rebbe Necha. He said that once a fella came to the stipler and for some advice. So he said, what's up? So he said, I have a problem with my anger. He says, I can't control my anger. I flare up and scream and this and everybody suffers from it. My family suffers from it. The people in work suffer from it, and my neighbors and everything. And I know it's wrong. I just can't control myself. So I'm 1 in 8. So what should I do? So the stipler says to him, okay, I'll tell you what. He says, I have a plan, to help you. But you have to promise me something. He says, what's that? He says, you have to stare at me, right, without losing your attention. You have to concentrate and stare at me for 5 minutes. And then I think I can help you. So stare at you for 5 minutes. Fine. There are worse things in the world to stare at the stipler for 5 minutes, So he says, okay, sure, Rebbe, you promise you'll stare. I'll take your mind. Fine. Says, okay, fine. So he sits across, from the stipler, and 5 minutes starts. So what is this? He's staring at the stipler. What does the stipler do? He starts making these weird gestures, weird faces, like of somebody getting angry, like, he doesn't even say this, it's like funny faces, one eye is up here and the other is down here, and he calms himself down and like this, and that. All these weird faces in the back of him for 5 minutes straight. So the guy's like, what's going on here? Some segula, Anyway, so he finishes the 5 minutes, and the stipler turns to him, and he says, you're probably wondering, what's this all about? He says, I just want to show you. He says, this is how you look. He says, this is how you look. You don't realize it. When you get angry, and this, doesn't that look weird? He says, this is exactly how you look. So he wanted to, you know, so it made a very, very big impression on the guy, and he worked on his anger from that point. I always remembered, you know, how the stifler looked, and you don't want to look like that. And in the end, he calmed down. So the Shem, we should approach Tisha B'Av, we should be zoicha to the binyan by Shlishi, Mimhir V'Yameinu.